and welcome to the Novel Ideas Podcast.
The Novel Ideas Podcast. Two siblings who love books.
Like, whoa.
We love them so much.
If we lived in the society that's in the Giffer, we would be really sad.
That's true. We would have no books.
We'd have read the three books in the house, like, a billion times.
Well, I guess I'll read the rule book for the township again. I love reading so much. I wish there was stuff to read.
All you have to do is become a receiver.
Yeah. Or a giver. This sounds kind of dirty, actually.
Uh-oh. Well, it's not, despite the fact that it involves old men touching little boys.
You know, I did have a brief moment where I wondered if I would need to discuss that. But no, I think that probably doesn't need to be a subject
it's
today.
It's not really a thing. So, I'm Gabs.
I'm Ben.
And obviously we're reading The Giver by Lois Lowry today.
The Giver. I guess before we get any more deeply into it, we should give you our spoiler policy.
Yeah, all right. So our spoiler policy is that we spoil the books.
We will spoil everything in it. So if you haven't read it and that's going to bother you, you should probably tune out in the next couple seconds.
Yeah, because, you know, the people in this community can't fucking see color.
Oh, jeez, she just did it.
Mind blown. My mind was blown the first time I read that.
That's true. Oh, something was different. Oh, it turns out he could see color all of a sudden. Well, yeah. In bursts.
Yes. So, why did we choose the book? Well,
because it's amazing.
Because it's The Giver. Obviously.
I mean, we've all read it. And by we, I mean people who read. I mean,
even
Americans.
People who don't read. Sure. A lot of people had to read it in school.
Yeah, I didn't have to read it in school, but I did read it in school.
I never had to read it for school, and I had no idea what it was about. And I actually ended up not reading it until last summer for the first time.
What?
Yeah. And I still, when I opened it, I still had no idea what it was about. Zero spoilers.
That's
I was like,
insane.
Is the old guy on the cover mean? Who's The Giver? Like, I didn't get it. And then I remember sitting there reading it, like, in a coffee shop with one of my friends, and he was doing something else, and, like, every 15 minutes, I'd be like, what?
That's crazy. How did you get that far? Because every friend you had probably read that book 10 years before you read that book, and none of them at any point ever spoiled any of it.
Yeah. No one ever told me what The Giver was about.
Maybe they consolidated all their memories of it into one person, and then they weren't allowed to talk about it.
No one else remembered anything about it, so they couldn't talk to
right.
me.
Right, only The Giver had the memories.
The receiver.
Well, receiver, it depends what you're doing.
So anyway, so the genre for the book is future, and this time we're going to say instead of future dystopia, it's more future utopia?
Or is it?
Well, yeah.
It's definitely a juvenile YA science fiction future utopia dystopia. You choose. We're going to talk about that, actually.
Yeah.
I think you can make the argument that it's a utopia.
Right, it's a utopia, but is a utopia, is living in a perfect society really perfect, I guess.
Right, yeah. Does a utopia take something away from what it means to actually be human?
Mm-hmm. So plot synopsis. Ben, you kind of ruined the punchline on this one.
Sorry, didn't mean to. I thought we were there already.
No. Because it's really, the plot synopsis is Jonas lives in a perfect village.
Or does he?
Dun, dun, dun.
Dun, dun, dun. In a world where everybody's perfect.
One man
has memories.
Can see colors and shit.
With his amazing blue eyes.
Blue eyes.
Blue eyes! Yeah, I could be a receiver of memory. What's up?
Me too. I'd be way better at it too.
That's right, we're way better at it.
Because you're dumb.
I'm not dumb. I have memories and
you'd be a
stuff.
Birth mother.
I'm the new receiver of memory. My older brother is a birth mother. Churning out babies. Big dumb guy.
Somehow having
wait, children. Dumb guy, hold on. Hold on.
I don't think that's fair. There should be guys.
Yeah, how come only women can give birth in this society?
Stupid.
Clearly not a utopia. Look at that sexism right there.
Oh my goodness.
Yes, if only I could live in the perfect utopian society where men could give birth. So basically, I want to live in the world of Arnold Schwarzenegger's Jr.
Now listen. It's not like women enjoy giving birth.
I think they do. Some, what about that Duggar woman?
Some do. She actually said that there was no overpopulation problem.
Well,
and if that everyone should churn out 100 babies.
Depending where you live, that might be true. Local context.
Anyway.
Anywho.
So the setting of the book, we think maybe is the United States.
I'm pretty convinced it's the United States. I mean, it's written by an American author in America. And there are kind of implied white people with maybe one Hispanic person who's dead. His name is Roberto.
Yeah, I wonder if, like, the new baby that was named Roberto, like, the reason they had to release Roberto is like, oh, we got another Hispanic.
It could well be.
Like, oh, that kid's skin is toned slightly differently.
Do you think they have more names than population? Or do you think they just recycle every name one for one?
I kind of imagine, like, a hurricane. Like,
there you go.
You have, like, a set list of names, and then you just kind of go through them.
They have 50 babies every year, and they use every letter of the alphabet for the first 26, and then they leave Y and Z off, or they skip some of the tougher ones, like X
on the probably.
Digit. Well, we already have Xander, so I don't know what we can do for the second go-around.
But yeah, we do have, like, you know, Asher, Fiona, Jonas, Gabriel, Lily. Like, everyone does have different alphabetical...
True. A lot of Hebrew names in this community, actually. Because there's also a Benjamin, and a Caleb, and a Gabriel. We're an Ethan short of having all of my siblings named in this book, actually.
Hooray! But we definitely know, regardless of where it is, that it's in the future.
It is in the future, because I don't know of any place like this.
Yes, and the memories that Jonas gets, the receiver, or I guess the giver, excuse me, keeps saying that they're way far back in the past. You have to go back and back and back.
Right, back and back and back is kind of a catchphrase.
Mm-hmm. And if these people have forgotten everything, and, you know, the memory of snow is so far back that even, you know, the guy who trained the current giver and the guy who trained him don't even remember it, then it's probably...
Clearly the weather's been controlled for a long time.
Yes. Point of view is third person close, focusing around Jonas, and you could never, ever, ever make an argument that the protagonist of this book was not Jonas.
This book almost doesn't have a character other than Jonas.
Yeah, and the giver.
And the giver. A little bit. Kind of. It's pretty much the argument I'm going to make, actually, is that this book does not have characters other than Jonas and maybe the giver. It just has plot devices and human shapes.
Which, I mean, considering the society they live in, is not really...
It fits really well.
Not unusual.
Yes, the idea of sameness.
If you think about it.
And they make it a little different than books we've discussed so far, and probably most books we'll ever discuss, because most books have characters, and the character of those characters is kind of important to what's going on in the book.
Most of the books we've discussed so far, we spend a significant amount of time analyzing characters and figuring out what they're doing and who we like. And in this one, you can't really have a fight over, do I like Asher? Because we know Asher's clumsy and happy.
Yeah. He's prone to misspeaking, but we don't know anything about him.
Yeah, his purpose is basically to show us that the society tries to get people to speak correctly and punishes you for being clumsy.
There you go.
To make everyone the same.
And if everybody likes you and you're fun, then they'll make you the assistant director of recreation when they choose your career for you at the age of 12.
Fiona's gentle and nurturing, which isn't specific to women in general in the book, but is important because she's going to be a caretaker of the old.
And you should probably be gentle and nurturing if you're going to do those things.
Everyone's personality is basically boiled down to a couple of traits that will pick out what they're going to be doing.
You didn't get too deep into the different careers that are available in this society, probably because coming up with a personality archetype for each one would have been a lot of work that distracted from the purpose of the book. But I do wonder what career path I would have been assigned at age 12.
I was wondering that myself, actually.
Let's see, what was I into when I was 12?
I was thinking that I was thoughtful, did all my homework. I probably have been some kind of teacher, my guess.
Yeah, probably. I was smart, but I didn't do any homework. I probably would have been chastised on a regular basis in this society when I was 12. Actually, I wouldn't have lived that long.
Oh, yes. Can we discuss that now or later?
Oh, what the heck, we're here. Let's talk about
it. All right.
I was a noisome child.
As they would say. Often restless.
Yes. One of the things about my infancy that I know, secondhand, obviously, is that it took me a long time to actually sleep through the night. I was crying all the freaking time for, 9 months, maybe?
Yeah, constantly.
Just constantly. And apparently, if you're that kind of baby in this society, then they just kind of gently cut you out of the herd.
They release you.
You are released.
Aww.
Released into the care of someone else in another community that is more understanding, no doubt.
Or being injected with poison.
Or possibly murdered with, a syringe full of poison. You know.
Same diff. And we were talking about this before, how it's not that Gabriel's sickly. I mean, he's a little bit at first, but once he gets taken home at night to Jonas's house, he's nurtured and cared for in the way that, people can be cared and nurtured for in this community. And then Jonas kind of goes a little bit extra. But, I mean, he's healthy, he's bright, he's passing all the intelligence tests. The only problem is he gets really fussy at night.
Yeah, and that's a big enough problem that they're not even going to give him the chance to become a productive member of society.
They kill you before you even have a chance.
So, yeah, when you talk about a carefully controlled society, this is a carefully controlled society.
You fit into the regulations.
Yeah, if you're a fussy baby, they kill you before you get the chance to grow up and have a wild streak, I guess.
I was just thinking, if you hadn't have been a fussy baby and grew up in the society, they would have put you on the speakers. Because you like to talk so much.
I like to talk so much.
That guy never shuts up. Have him make announcements.
Put him on the PA. Let him make sarcastic announcements.
You wouldn't even know how to be sarcastic.
I don't know. I think the people on the PA are the only sarcastic people in the society because they make these general announcements aimed at one person and everybody knows what they're talking about. I don't know if you can have a sarcasm-free society.
I don't know.
But they're pretty much a lie-free society, at least in their personal interactions. I mean, maybe not so much with some of the jobs, but certainly the children.
Let's talk a little bit about raising kids and family and what you're supposed to do in this society.
Yeah, that was one of the more interesting scenes in the book to me was the dinner scene,
the emotion.
Yeah, the sharing of feelings. Mm-hmm. Or for that matter, in the morning, the sharing of dreams.
Mm-hmm. The sharing of dreams is interesting because I guess they're taking dreams at more of a face value than we do.
They're looking for deviation from the norm a little bit in those dreams. Dream telling is one of those things that most people do anyway. So maybe that's how they're building that in a little bit too. But families are... I mean, they're carefully chosen. You apply for a spouse, and they find you one. It can take...
someone who meets your temperament and your intelligence.
Sex not even part of the equation, by the way.
It is illegal to be naked in front of somebody else unless you're a new child or an old person.
Yep. So that means your spouse and you are... they didn't really... it was never mentioned whether they... sleep in the same bed. I would be willing to bet they don't, though.
I would not be surprised if they had separate bedrooms.
Yeah, even separate bedrooms. Mm-hmm. But the families are encouraged to be open with each other emotionally as much as
they have emotions.
Have emotions, right. Hey, you know, tell us about a feeling you experienced today. Oh, well, I was angry because this kid was cutting in front of the line on the slide today on the playground. And okay, well, let's talk about where this anger comes from and whether it's justified. And they actually went to lengths to put it in a context where maybe you shouldn't be angry at this boy because you don't understand exactly what his circumstances are.
I thought that was interesting because that's actually a valid point.
Yes.
I'm pissed at this guy. Why are you pissed? He did this. Well, you know, he comes from a different society. Maybe he doesn't know what's going on. Oh, maybe I should think about other people.
Yeah, I mean, there are aspects of this society. I mean, it's very bland. That's the thing not to like. But you could idealize portions of it. I think the family discourse and the some of the traditions they have are probably healthy. I think that some families would benefit a lot from all sitting down together and talking about their feelings every night.
Every night, yeah. Dinner every night with your family. Although the part that I thought sucked was once your kids hit a certain age where they have their own careers, then you go get to live with the childless adults.
Yeah, and apparently you don't have any interaction with your children anymore.
Never talk to them again.
And even though they refer to love as an outdated and too general description of an emotion, they still like their children.
They are proud of them.
They're proud of
them. They enjoy them.
They enjoy their children. You would think that some of these childless adults would want to still interact with the people they raised for the first, I don't know, however many years of their lives. I guess until their career training is done.
And they go off on their own. I was wondering a little bit whether maybe a childless adult being involved in their kids' lives still when their kids are starting to raise a family is just too much interference going on. Since they have absolutely no concept of grandparents.
That's true. I mean, it's pretty clear that they don't have interaction with their children once their children are adults. It's just the rationale behind it is not made as obvious.
I'm sure everyone in the House of the Old has kids who have kids.
Oh.
Yeah, I'm sure Jonas's grandparents are living in the House of the Old.
Probably.
And he just has no idea.
Yeah, you can check the Hall of Records and find out. They're actually not trying to hide that from you. But
no, just no one.
The tradition of non-interaction is so strong that apparently no one violates the norm. I think one difference between a YA novel, a pretty short one, like this book, and a more developed story is that, you know, if she had 400 pages to tell the story of this community, maybe we would see some minor acts of deviation from the norm and see that there are a couple of cracks in the facade in places. But this book is pretty much a straight line Jonas's story, and that stuff doesn't come up.
Mm-hmm. We know enough to know how the society runs and the stuff about it that's messed up.
Right, yeah. And to really just explore the central theme of the book and not worry too much about depth of universe building. I mean, it is a carefully constructed universe. I'm certainly not criticizing the society, the technique used in developing this society. But that I'd put that on my list of questions. Like, is there some outcast member of society, or maybe not outcast, but someone in a marginal job that everyone thinks is, that guy's kind of weird. He still talks to his parents like once a week.
Right. He has kids at home, but sometimes he goes and visits the childless adults.
Right. Or
weird.
On the way home from, like, he works in the same place as, maybe someone who works in the same place as the dad who raised him. That's got to happen sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's odd. They always hang out during lunch breaks and they walk home, and sometimes it'll be like an hour after work ends before they get back to their respective homes. Actually talk to each other. It's really weird.
How strange.
There's got to be one of those guys somewhere. Or I don't know. Maybe.
Maybe not.
Maybe that's what noisy babies grow up to become.
I should have known. I would have fit perfectly.
That's right. It's part of how carefully this society has been thought out. You know, and even though everything is so carefully controlled, I actually thought it was interesting that they have this job of receiver of memories that Jonas falls into. If you want everything to be the same.
The sameness.
The sameness. And it's really a doctrine, I think, is a good word for sameness in this setting. Because they want everyone to be the same. And you have one guy whose job it is to hold on to the memories of all the stuff before everything was the same. And it's a respected position. It's a very lonely position.
Since no one else has any memory.
No one has any of your context. No one can... I mean, literally no one can understand the things that you feel and understand. But it is a respected position. And they actually listen to the guy. He's part of the Elder Council. Though they only have him come to meetings about twice a decade, it sounds like.
I would guess he's probably the most respected member. Because he's wiser than everyone, but they don't know how.
Right, they don't really know why, other than he has these memories. And they listen to him.
They do. Anything he says goes.
It sounds like when the receiver of memories speaks about something that people don't argue with him. They accept that he has knowledge they don't and act on it accordingly.
Yeah, I remember when the giver was talking about deciding not to have birth mothers have more babies, and the reason he decided against it was because he remembered hunger and he didn't like want the same situation to happen in their society where people might go hungry. And Jonas says, oh, did you explain this to him? He says they don't want to know. They just want the decision. No, birth mothers shouldn't have more than three kids because I've looked back and that's how it should be. And they just go, okay.
All right. And even there in their executive council, they're looking for someone to hand them a decision. They don't even want to make choices.
When they're talking about how anytime a proposed rule change goes into the council, they toss it around for 3 years, never make a decision, and then everyone just kind of forgets about it.
Right. Right. It goes into committee, kind of a jab at, well, pretty much any legislative process anywhere in the world. But I will throw it out to a committee, and probably eventually no one will remember that it was a thing.
And everyone knows and just like laughs about it.
It's one of the community jokes, running gag in their world.
The really important thing the Council of the Elders does do, though, is choose people's professions.
Yeah, if it sounds like to me almost that's the only choice that anyone ever does make. Where do we place these 12-year-olds into their professions? And they seem to be pretty good at it.
I kind of thought so, too, actually.
Yeah. And maybe there's probably some practice that goes into that. I bet
they stalk the kids all the time, I guess.
The last year, they're tracked very carefully. I wouldn't be surprised if when you're on the executive level there, you have access to extra data. They probably have all these metrics and stuff that they use.
I think they were talking about how Jonas said everyone has a speaker in their home. And the giver's the only one who's allowed to turn his off.
Right.
So they must be able to listen into conversations. And they probably get your parents to report on you when you're approaching 12 about the feelings that you're having and that sort of thing.
And your year 11 teacher is keeping a dossier on everybody. And I'm going to also go ahead and suggest that the people of this society are such sheep that they even get in the ballpark, no one's gonna make any waves about it anyway.
It's not like if you were taking people in today's world where we, you know, get to have personalities and someone goes, oh, well, you know, you're really serious and studious, so you're gonna become a teacher. I'm like, well, I hate teaching. No, it doesn't matter. That's your personality.
That's what you're good at. You're gonna do it.
But they don't really know anything about, you know, preferences, and they know that they have a set list of jobs, and
right,
there's a bunch that plays into it. The other thing I think is well, the thing I think is messed up about it, because there's plenty that's messed up about it.
Yes.
Is although they seem to do a pretty good job, one of the things that kind of concerns me is there are a lot of people who are still complete children at 12. I mean, you could argue everyone's still a kid at 12, but there are people who really need 3 or 4 years to mature, and there are people who need 10 years to mature. You know, there are a lot of people who don't figure out.
There are people who need 25 years to mature.
Yeah. And so if you're saying at 12, well, you pretty much screw around and you don't seem very smart, so you're going to be a laborer. And maybe in our society, that person, like, goes to college and founds an internet company and makes $1 million.
Right. But when everybody's being assigned a job, certainly no one's going to be assigned the job of entrepreneur.
Right. That's not happening.
Your job, you're quirky and smart and you don't quite buckle down, but you seem independent. I think those people probably just don't make it that far. I don't think your independence survives that far in this upbringing. Mm-hmm. But your idea, your job is to have crazy ideas and try to change things about society, because they are not about change at all.
No. And I would guess that probably by the time you hit 12, you can't even conceive of anything different, except maybe, oh, they should get bikes a year earlier. That's the right. That's the most extreme change anybody's coming up with.
Everybody seems to learn how to ride a bike a year or two before they get their bikes. Why don't we just go ahead and bump that up, since it is in de facto in place anyway?
Whoa!
Whoa!
Rocking the boat!
It's a crazy idea. The first idea to make it out of committee in like 3 centuries.
They knock it up a year.
Whoa! 8-year-olds with bicycles? That's crazy! Next thing you know, you'll be letting the 6-year-olds button their own coats.
How? That detail is a little creepy to me.
A little bit.
You get a back button coat so you can learn dependence.
Interdependence.
Ooh. Hmm. I mean, I guess you could argue that, I mean, America's so obsessed with independence, like, I'm gonna make my own way.
Right.
And we seem to forget a lot that we actually rely on tons of people to help us.
Right. We're all rugged individualists who will survive the zombie apocalypse, and none of us should have to pay taxes because we produce everything we want for ourselves. Oh, wait, no, that's not even close to the truth.
We're all living in our parents' basements.
Guess what?
We're all 30 and can't support ourselves.
Not yet. Soon.
That's not a jab at you. I'm not being a speaker. I'm not making a generalized, that's really a jab at you.
Attention. Would 30-somethings dependent on, who are not completely independent, please?
Please report to. Okay, so we've talked a deal about the society. You touched on how important the receiver was, and I steered the conversation away a little bit. But I thought we'd talk a little bit about Jonas becoming the new receiver of memory.
Okay. Well, I mean, the scene itself during the selection.
Nuts.
Yeah. So going down the row, basically by age.
Everyone has a number still from when they were a kid. And so, you know, 18.
19.
I loved the detailed one, so a parent gets annoyed. 23. Yeah. Come back here.
I did like that. 23. It's like reminding him, you're just a number. Uh-huh. I will put a syringe in your soft little skull.
Well, or the 4-year-old Caleb who died, and they just replace him.
Yeah, they cook up a new Caleb a few years later. Mm-hmm. When the time is right. I did, not to take another tangent, but I really did like the ceremony of loss.
Oh, everyone's saying the name and then saying it softer
and softer and softer. I thought that was kind of poignant, actually.
Mm-hmm. And then the replacement was creepy. The loss was kind of nice. The replacement was a little weird.
Where they bring him back like it's the same kid and anybody. Like, that's a little weird.
Not
but
really the case. Yeah.
I liked the loss half of it. That's all I'm saying.
And I wondered if the parents, I wonder if they were just drugged for several months. So yeah. Because losing a kid would cause them an extreme amount of grief.
Or maybe they're just,
maybe they're so,
so practical about it that
they are okay.
I mean, they did wait a few years before they got him a new one, I mm-hmm. think. So, who knows? But yeah, they skip Jonas's number when they're assigning positions. And then he's called up at the very end because it's very rare that we get a new receiver of memories.
Yeah, the last time it happened 12 years ago?
I think it was 10 years ago.
Something like that. But, I mean, it happens more rarely than that. It's just that the last one was released.
Last one didn't work out. Requested release. Basically yes. Suicided.
Mm-hmm. Actually, but we don't know that at this moment.
No, not at this moment.
That she was requesting release. We don't know what release means yet.
That's true. We suspect...
Yes. As an adult, when you read they've been released, you think, okay.
Right. That's obviously a euphemism for killed, you know, it's vaporized, disappeared, choose your favorite story that uses a euphemism for the government making someone disappear.
Yes. But as a kid, you could think, oh, maybe they're just letting them go?
When I read it in fifth grade, I really thought that's what they were doing for most of the book.
That's what Jonas thinks they're doing.
That's true, yeah. Oh, they let him into the wilderness. Like, there are obviously some holes in it. Reading the book as a 10-year-old, I was sitting there and wondering, well, if they're letting this old person who can barely care for themselves out and just, like, out of the community on the other side of the bridge or something, I guess maybe they could go find shelter. Or maybe there's some community of released people somewhere and they keep an eye on the boundary and go grab the babies when they put them out there, but... that doesn't feel like a thing that would really happen.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I think, because you were thinking maybe, you know, they just kind of wander around and die, maybe?
Yeah, like they're basically dying of exposure.
But I'm not sure Jonas even really knows that death exists at this point.
He definitely doesn't take the step past, oh, they're being released to what exactly are the ramifications of that? Like if you take a 70-year-old dude who can barely walk and drop him off outside the community somewhere, then, like, how is he going to care for himself? He's just, oh, they're being released. It's like, oh, you get home from school, and where's the dog? He's on the farm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, all right.
He'll be happy there. He can run around. Okay. I wish he wasn't on the farm. I wish he was here.
But,
well, he needed to go to the farm. Sorry.
Doesn't sound too bad.
But no, it turns out release equals murder. State sanctioned.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay, so this is something I wanted to talk about. So, when Jonas becomes receiver, since I guess we keep getting off topic, he gets his, like, list of 4 rules, or 5, or maybe it's 7.
There are more.
at everything. I just read this.
I'm gonna say 8.
Okay. Well, the last one is, you may lie. And this totally blows his mind.
Yeah, he had no idea. He assumed nobody lied.
Yeah, I wonder if other people have that on their instruction sheets.
Yeah.
And he gets to be rude if he wants. He can ask anyone a question, they'll answer it. He can ignore people if he wants to. So, you know, if someone makes an apology, you don't have to say, I accept your apology, although it will perturb them, because that's what you do.
Right.
You
don't have to make apologies. Sirens! As you can tell, we're in a very high-tech studio.
Jesus.
You can hear those things for a mile.
Oh my god.
It's going to be awkward when I edit this audio together. I might leave a couple of these comments in. Like, the sirens will be like, eh!
Oh man. Good enough? Okay. Siren break over.
Yes. The podcast is now siren free.
So, yes, Jonas doesn't have to follow these rules of rudeness. He can lie. And then he finds out at the end when he gets to witness the ceremony of release and he sees his dad inject this twin to release him. And his dad's told him, well, I tuck him in gently and then... That's it. And Jonas keeps going, no, now he's going to tuck him in. Now he's going to tuck him in. Instead, he just drops him in a box and throws him down a garbage chute.
Throws him into the incinerator, apparently.
And Jonas is thinking, oh my god. And the giver says, well, yeah, he doesn't have to tell the truth about that. So there are a certain number of people in society who know something of what's going on, but
yeah, and it's,
don't talk about it.
Even though the context is such that the people who have to do it, We actually were discussing this a little bit. Does Jonas's dad really fully understand the implications of what he's doing?
Because to us, at first, the gut reaction is monster.
Right.
He just killed a baby and didn't care.
A perfectly healthy baby.
Yes.
And a...
Because it weighed in 7 ounces less.
Right. And speaking to it in a creepy baby talk voice the whole time he's murdering it to death.
Uh-huh. And then just tosses it down a garbage chute.
Yep. Right. Got that done. Tossing it in a shoebox. Drop it in the fire.
Walks out. That was messed up.
Yeah. And so, I mean, I think that probably part of the training is to ease you into that.
And they probably don't really have a huge concept of what they're doing.
I'm sure it's completely rationalized and justified in their mind, but it's a disturbing enough difference that if you haven't had the indoctrination leading up to that point, that they don't want you to know, because most of society doesn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
Infant side's pretty jarring, even if you live in the safe little box these people live in.
Mm-hmm. Because release of infants is rare, and it makes people sad.
Yeah.
Because his dad even tries to save Gabriel when they're going to release him, and says, well, let me try for a couple months.
Yeah, he puts in a special request. I mean, he knows that if the child's released, he's gone forever, and would rather not see that. So, you know, there's some compassion for the situation there.
Yeah, one of the things I have to remember when I'm reading the book, it's not as if the people have no emotions.
Right.
They just don't really have... Their emotions seem way more childlike. Because if someone says, I'm angry, but they've never really experienced anything, it's a lot different than someone who has gone out and seen war and horror and all the stuff, and then they get angry. Well, their anger is going to be way more contextual.
Yeah, Jonas.
They're like, I'm only going to get angry about really important things.
Yeah, Jonas makes the point to himself, really, where, oh, yeah, well, when Lily was angry, she wasn't really angry. Like, I now have memories of what anger really is, and when you're actually that angry, you're so passionate, you can't really speak about it rationally. You wouldn't be there at the table saying, oh, I was angry today.
She was mildly irritated.
She was upset, yes.
But the, you know, the thing is that the point the book is making is that what's the point if you don't have the context for anything? Can you really say that these people know anything or feel anything if they have, like, no idea of the relevance or the context of anything?
Yeah. Is it, you know, are you living a full life if you don't have the full range of emotion, of adult emotions? Can you really be completely happy without having experienced some pain for reference?
And the giver, I mean, at one point when Jonas is saying, oh, we learned in science class, and the giver's, they know nothing. He is so mad about it.
Yeah.
Like, these people are just ignorant people. They don't know anything.
Right. They know lots of facts, but they don't know anything about being people.
And I'm assuming part of that is the bitterness of the fact that he has all of the memory.
Yeah.
And he actually knows what's up.
Yeah. He has... His job, essentially, is to hold all of society's pain in one person.
Mm-hmm. And joy as well, but I think the pain is probably more...
Yeah. Yeah. The pain is the harder part of it to bear.
Yes.
He has his favorite memories. Mm-hmm. The family scene at Christmas dinner and...
Love.
Love. And, for that matter, simpler things like sunshine.
I thought it was really sweet when he said that he hadn't given Jonas any music yet because he couldn't bear to let go of any of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a world without music.
And a world without color, for that matter.
And without color. Well, you can see how they'd go together.
The first time I read this book and found out that people didn't see color, I was like, how is that possible? That's so crazy.
It's one of the choices they made. And it's almost... I don't know exactly how they pulled it off. Like, there's clearly a genetic component,
because
only some people
are capable of it.
seemingly. I don't, maybe the ability gets activated somehow, too. Maybe everyone could still do it if things were different.
If they all had the memory?
Yeah. I wonder if there's a little bit of the, it would be more like a Heinlein type of future, but he was way into the hypnotic suggestions and, like, the super advanced psychology of control and media. And I wonder if there's a little bit of that at play, too. They're part of the indoctrination as they're growing up actually keeps them from seeing color.
Mm.
Another thing that maybe would get touched on if it was a 400-page, like, 120,000-word novel.
More for adults, yeah. Maybe they talk about the stirrings more if it was for adults.
I don't know how you wouldn't talk about it more. That would be the obvious angle of rebellion in a more adult story.
The stirrings, I remember the first time I read it, that almost pissed me off more than anything else. I was so mad.
Yeah, well, I mean, coming off of Stranger in a Strange Land, it's kind of funny that we go from a book where the idea of everybody should be allowed to make as many choices as they want, represented especially in their ability to have sex with anyone that, well, basically anyone they're close to,
mm-hmm.
versus this society where no one has sex.
Ever.
It's a sexless society, and it is completely devoid of choice. Is there something in the air that links sex and choice in our society?
Hmm.
Hmm.
Maybe.
I think there's a dissertation waiting to be written here, frankly.
You couldn't really choose people's spouses for them if they... I don't want them. We're not going to have good sex.
True. Marriage would have to be part of this dissertation because traditionally people don't choose their own partners.
And that's always turned out well in the past and in the present and anytime. I did like the point Jonas made of, well, if people were choosing their own spouses, wouldn't that be really messy? Like,
yes, Jonas, it is very messy. It's basically wall-to-wall chaos.
They're allowed to choose their own professions? That's messed up. And to some degree, it's like, well, yeah, people do choose jobs that they don't like, and people do choose spouses that end up not being compatible. So to some degree, choosing that stuff for people takes away part of the trials there. But then, you know, you don't get to do what... You don't get to learn from your mistakes.
Yeah, I mean, how do you have such a sedate society without sex in it? Or maybe I didn't say that quite correctly. How would you have such a sedate society that did have sex?
Yes, I was going to say.
Because they seem to be violence-free.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody has enough to eat. Everybody is at least civil to everybody else. It sounds like, I mean, since you saw this through the eyes of a child, it sounds like bullying doesn't really exist.
I think you'd get caught for that.
I think
you get trouble for it.
Busted big time for that in this society, yeah.
Well, one of the things Jonas says is everyone goes out of their way not to point out differences. So, you know, we know Jonas has pale eyes, which we know are blue when he can see color, but
yes.
He has pale eyes, which is really unusual. But no one is ever like, hey, Jonas, look at your weirdo pale eyes.
Yeah, because, hey, you pale-eyed freak.
Like, I think when the dad brings Gabriel home and Lily goes, oh, he has different eyes like you. And Jonas is really embarrassed that she pointed it out.
Right, yeah.
So we can consider choice when we think about Rosemary. Because she does make a choice in the end. Just not a very pleasant one.
No, maybe she thought, once she had the idea that she could make choices, maybe that was the only choice she thought she had anymore.
I did wonder a little bit what happened to Rosemary that made her just, maybe instead of Jonas who decided, this is wrong, let's do something about it, she thought, this is wrong, I could never stay quiet, I'm just going to back out now before it's too much.
Yeah, and Jonas does wonder a little bit himself. What led her to that? Oh, she just not strong enough for it? And, you know, is it a weakness of character that led her to make that choice?
Because it sounds like, you know, the giver is saying that he's trying to give her happy memories, and then she said, you know, I need to get all of them. And so he kind of filtered in the bad ones too, but they just, I guess, seem to affect her a lot more than they did Jonas.
Yeah, or affected her differently, which is really the first, what you first said, because it affects Jonas pretty strongly, you know, especially that war memory really yes. sticks with him. Yeah. And he, on a holiday, he sees the other kids he knows playing, essentially playing soldiers. And he's the only one who realizes what that actually represents, and he's horrified by it.
I mean, I would argue that Jonas probably understands war better than us, since he actually had to lie in the body of a dying soldier for hours on end.
True, yeah.
Basically.
I mean, I've read about it plenty, but I've never been there, thankfully.
Yeah, and no one gets it. They're angry at him, but not really yeah. for...
Jonas, you ruined our game. Thanks a lot, Buzzkill Boy.
He's like, well...
Well, stop pretending to murder each other and...
Maybe I'll back off.
Maybe I'll back off, exactly. And so, I mean, Jonas reacts to it a lot with outrage.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the painful stuff hurts, but, like, the emotionally painful things, the societal ills that he has memories of, those things really outrage him. And maybe with Rosemary, she just... Maybe it didn't affect her more. Maybe she was just depressed by it.
Yeah. This is something that I just can't...
Right. Instead of this is wrong, maybe I can fix it, it's this is wrong and I have no hope anymore.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it sounds really sucky to be a receiver of memory.
Yes.
Because the giver who was the receiver, I mean, he has days where he just can't function. Jonas shows up and he's like, I'm too racked by pain.
Balled up in pain, yeah.
Thinking of all this horrible stuff. So, it's not a pleasant job, and no. probably a lot of them have had those kinds of, you know, thoughts and feelings and problems before.
Yeah, I wouldn't... I would think that communities in the shape of this one would actually kind of have trouble keeping receivers of memory. I'm a little surprised that Rosemary was the first one to...
At least in their memory.
Yeah. But, I mean, they created a rule for her, and the rules are forever.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, that rule was added that he couldn't request release right. after she did. Mm-hmm.
And, again, just surprised that you'd have something so painful and so horrible and so eye-opening and really not have anyone react to it that strongly for several generations.
I mean, maybe the fact... I mean, I would also have a hard time thinking that the person who trained you wouldn't grow to love you regardless because you're the only people who can feel emotions.
Right.
But, I mean, I wonder if there was something about the way that the giver cared for Rosemary that made it different. Like, maybe the other guys tried to be more indifferent, to, like, distance themselves from it, and he just... couldn't.
Accepted her as a person and moved on. Well...
But it feels a little unlikely that previous guys would, you know, not be able to hold back. I don't know.
It does... If you're the only two people that you've ever known who share experiences like this, it does seem pretty unlikely that you wouldn't end up really close.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, the giver thought of Rosemary as a daughter. Maybe she was, in fact, his daughter.
This is something I read online where they said that the giver reveals Rosemary as his daughter because at one point he says, I'll go join my daughter. And Jonas says, I didn't know you had a daughter. He goes, my daughter Rosemary. And I went, oh yeah, you know, because he loved her and cared for her and thought of her as a daughter. But this thing I read online, well, maybe she's his literal daughter.
He had a wife.
Yeah.
She's now in the home for childless adults.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they did request a child. Maybe the child he raised did end up getting selected as the receiver of memories. And as the only person in the community with these memories, maybe he was the only poor bastard who actually loved his child as she grew up.
Right. And, you know, he might have had two, but the other one's just
yeah.
doing whatever.
It's not definitively revealed whether she was a daughter in fact or just in metaphor.
I think either way it works.
It works just as well for me either way. I guess she was only in training for a brief period of time.
10 weeks?
Yeah.
Something like that?
3 months. No more than 3 months. And to get that close in that period of time maybe seems a little over the top for some people, but
hey man, if you've ever been to summer camp, right, you know.
And if you are sharing experiences of that depth, especially, and every single day, yeah, you form a pretty strong attachment in a few weeks. But it works either way, I think.
So Rosemary, because she requested release and did the death herself, which I thought was interesting. Mm-hmm. And Jonas now knows this, and he knows that when she died, that the community got her memories, and everyone freaked out for a brief time and kind of got back under control. And so now Jonas knows that if he left, they would get all his memories, but he's been training for a year and not just 10 weeks.
He has a lot more memories and a lot more of the painful ones, especially.
Uh-huh.
I actually got a little bit hung up on this plot point because the mechanics of it were bothering me. So if he leaves the community, then the memories fly back into the community or something? How does that work?
I got really confused with the mechanics of the community gets all of his memories, but then he loses them.
Mostly.
But yeah, he still kind of has them, because I guess he didn't experience them for himself. But then I guess with Rosemary, they're able to like weed the memories out.
I guess.
It was kind of confusing. I didn't really know how that worked.
Yeah. So what I did is made the decision not to be hung up on the mechanics of it. To suspend disbelief.
Oh, well, that's nice.
And to move on with the story to make it work.
Right. Just accept that that's going to happen and when Jonas pieces up.
Anything science fiction fantasy, if you get too deeply into the mechanics of anything, then it'll break down at some point. So,
and the idea of being able to transfer memories to a person is a little bit magical, yeah, anyway.
Exactly. So I'll accept that memories can be transferred from person to person by putting your hand on their back and kind of wishing your memories into them. But I'm not going to accept that when you die, all those transmittable memories are then sent out into the ether and transmitted to everybody.
That's just too weird.
That's just too weird, man.
It sounds like magic.
Sounds like different parts of the same spectrum to me, so.
Yeah.
If I even accept the premise of memories being transferred, I guess I can live with it.
So we have Jonas running the hell away. With Gabriel.
Yes, with Gabriel, so he won't be released, because Jonas misses a night at home, and he'd been keeping Gabriel quiet during the night, and yeah. Well, he got all fussy, because his Jonas wasn't there. And so they're fleeing, and they're actually being pursued.
By planes?
Yeah, search planes out looking for them, and I thought that was kind of interesting, actually.
The search planes?
Yeah, because they're all about sameness. It seems like if someone who was so different leaves the community anyway that, I mean, it seems like their standard practice for that sort of thing is just to disgrace the name. There won't be any more Jonases born in this community. And you pretend like it never happened, and people can't really think about it without feeling some shame. Instead, they're going to the trouble to chase him down. So maybe, you know, to me it's one of two things. Either deviation from the norm is so outlandish that they have to bring him back to make an example of him, or that this receiver of memory position is so important. Or maybe the chaos of the memories escaping mm-hmm. is so important that they just have to bring him back.
Yeah, they're so desperate because of all the memories they're having that they try to grab him so they can be like, take them back! Take the memories back!
Yeah, and I was kind of trying to think of it a little bit in like a more Orwellian context. So, and well, wouldn't they just make it alter the information so he was never there? But at the same time, I don't think that government, I don't think Orwell's government in 1984 would let you get away with an act of rebellion either. So.
They wouldn't worry about that receiver of memory crap.
So yeah, so there's a little bit of the totalitarianism in there, which mostly doesn't get examined in this book.
The search planes seem to kind of suck because they never find him, and he's like a kid on a bike.
Yeah, he's a kid on a bike and mostly without notable landscape features. And this was another thing I had a slight problem with the mechanics of. Like, he could remember himself cold, and I'm going, okay, so aren't two hypothermic human bodies still a lot warmer than the blank landscape around them?
I was thinking, I don't even know if that was, like, true. He might have just thought, oh, maybe that'll help.
Right, like huddling next to a bush or something, the plane just didn't spot him.
Yeah, and he just hoped the cold thing worked.
I can buy that.
That's the way I chose to see it, because I was like, that's silly. But at the end, we have, so he's finally escapes the planes. Like, there are finally hills again, there are trees.
Wildlife?
Yeah. Well, yeah, he sees deer and,
yeah,
like, a fox, I think, but he didn't know what it was called.
No one knew what animals were. He didn't.
Which is so messed up.
That is so messed up. I know, not a single animal. Like, they had fish. Have,
like, dogs.
I don't know, I could see him going without dogs, because people could form attachments that's to them. True. But I was a little surprised they didn't have livestock of any form.
Yeah, they had fish. They probably had livestock. People just didn't know they were eating it.
Maybe. Yeah. They didn't know they were animals. Maybe none of the comfort objects.
were right. Animals people. Maybe like cows as comfort objects.
That one's a bear. That one's a hippo. That one's an elephant. Well, why would you choose a cow as a comfort object? That's not a comfort object. That's dinner.
Right. That's, you're silly. But yeah, animals, snow, and sun, and everything. So apparently there are some people in the world who decided the sameness was a crap idea. And said, you weirdos can go over there.
Yeah.
I'm going to stay over here.
And those weirdos didn't come to dominate the entire landscape. Unlike many future visions of dystopian, utopian type of societies. Which is actually more realistic. So, to me, actually, I'll save this for the questions part. I'll come back to that. But he's into this area that is not controlled by the sameness. And he's pretty much at the end of his endurance. And he gets to the top of the hill and he finds a sled.
Yeah.
Just like the very first memory that the giver gave him.
Hops on it.
Starts riding downhill into the middle of a village that is in the middle of
Christmas
celebrations, apparently.
Because he sees the lights.
Yeah, 'tis the season at the very advent-y.
Yeah. Sled gets stuck, and he hears music in the distance, and then the book ends.
Right. So, did that actually happen?
One of the popular theories for The Giver is that Jonas and Gabriel are basically dying, and he hallucinates all of that because that's what you do when you're dying of the cold.
Yeah. Your brain sends out weird signals, tries to keep you from being miserable while your body shuts
cobble
down.
Cobble together something, you know. Oh, sled. That has some significance.
All right, so let's argue a little bit for and against this idea. Let's start with for, because I think we're going to have a harder time doing it.
Oh, for the death?
For him being dead, yeah.
Oh, geez, I never even thought that he was dead when I read it. So.
Well, I didn't either, but
well, I guess you could say it could be like a holy shit, like, you know, things are fucked sort of ending.
Yeah, it could be if you wanted to argue that the lack of choice is worth everybody being physically healthy and at least content, if not necessarily joyful.
Well, I thought maybe it was more he thought he didn't really escape the sameness and it's everywhere and can't really make a change.
Or even that if memories and experiences are so important, then if he hallucinates it and he's happy at the end before he drops dead, then maybe that's just as good.
I don't know. I have a hard time wrapping my head around the why she would choose death.
Okay, yeah. So let's get to the against part, because to me this is a lot easier. if he goes through all of those experiences and he's so outraged by it and he leaves with Gabriel to save his life and finally gets to the place where everything isn't the same and then he drops dead, then what was the point of the whole book up to that point? Why even write it?
Yeah. Isn't choice and memory a good thing?
I don't understand the story that she'd be trying to tell if he was actually dead at the end. And I am, trust me on this, guys, I am Mr. Dark Ending. I like it when it's all fucked up and weird and just dark and horrific at the end. I don't want every story to end that way, but I'm totally okay with it. And it's like everything in this book is clearly building towards this decision point, and if Jonas is supposed to be a sympathetic character, then why in the hell would you kill him off at the end and show that he made the wrong decision?
The reason that I didn't think he was dead was because at the end it says he hears music in the distance, but we know that the giver refused to give him music because he just wanted to hold on to it for as long as he could. So if Jonas has never had heard music before and has no concept of what music is, then how could he possibly hear music at the end?
Right.
That doesn't make any sense. There has to be music happening for him to hear music, because he doesn't know what it is.
Going back to the mechanics of the situation again.
Like, straight up logic.
Right.
And actually, one thing I read suggested that he had actually accidentally done a huge circle, and he's ending back up at his community that's now completely changed because of all the memories he left behind.
In like a week and a half?
I don't know. I just read it and thought it was kind of interesting.
That is kind of interesting.
Maybe he's gone longer than a week and a half.
I feel like that's a little too optimistic, whereas having him drop dead is a little too pessimistic.
Do it in the middle. Someone will pick him up and take him in.
Right. Maybe a year or two down the road, his old community sends envoys out to...
Okay, sorry, man.
Hey, we, like, want to talk to you choice people again, because we're making choices and stuff over here.
Hope that's cool. So, with all that said, let's do some wrap-up.
All right.
So, as far as the strengths and weaknesses of the writing, really excellently written YA novel.
Yeah, I mean, Lois Lowry is one of the best at this. She has a lot of books that have sold pretty well and that are generally really well regarded. It's written very concisely.
I feel like there's no scene that could be cut out or that needs to be cut out.
I agree. It's very clear. And even as a 10-year-old, like I said, I took release pretty literally for a while, but there is nothing in there I couldn't grasp. Like, there's nothing there too adult.
I think it's cool for kids and adults, because as a kid, this isn't one of the first times you're probably being introduced to this concept and learning, you know, the importance of choice and that sort of thing. But it's laid out in a story, so you just have, like, an adult blabbing at you.
Right.
And as an adult, it's really interesting, because you're like, whoa, that's... Why would people do that?
Right, and you're looking for the double meanings, and you're speculating two and three layers deep on everything. And
seeing how, oh, the sacrifices these people made to not be hungry maybe aren't worth it.
Yeah, because, well, certainly as a young person reading the book, then I was with Jonah.
Jonas,
geez. I was trying not to do that. I knew that was going to happen sometime today. I've been trying really hard not to do that. I knew I was with Jonas the whole way. As an adult, I was wondering a little bit if you could argue that the trade-offs that they're making are actually worth it.
Yeah, I mean, some of the things, no war, no hunger is pretty...
Those are pretty good things.
Impressive.
And everybody is civil. Nobody's miserable. I don't know if anybody is truly happy in the sense that we think of the word.
I mean, the giver would argue they can't be happy.
Right.
They don't know what happiness is.
Which is up for debate, actually. If you think you're happy, even if you haven't experienced the true ups and downs of life, then you're still happy if you think you are, right?
But you're happier if you've experienced more. And then, I mean, obviously, probably from our conversation, you picked up that the relevance is still around. I mean, the book's about 20 years old now, I think, written in the early 90s, but still very pertinent.
Choice, man.
Still very interesting. So,
On some level, I was saying this before we started recording, but on some level, every debate we have in this country is basically about choice on some level. How much freedom of choice should we have?
Yeah. And obviously that's like the crux of the book.
Yes.
Is choice good or bad? And as Jonas notes, well, choice can get messy. That's true.
Right.
But most people still prefer to have it.
Yeah. Worth it in the end.
Mm-hmm. So questions for the book.
All right. Well, I'm going to get this one out before I forget what I wanted to say from earlier. But the fact that there are communities, you know, relatively close, within a 13-year-old's 10 days of bike riding through bad weather away from each other, how did this society come into existence? Because it seems like this isn't the forces of sameness conquer everybody and enforce it on everyone. I wonder if this community actually is a literal utopian experiment where a bunch of people chose to go form these communities with sameness to try to get rid of hunger and war and all this bad stuff. So that's one of the things I wonder. Where did this community come from in the first place?
How big is it?
Yeah, they referenced their other communities. I mean, it can't be 50 births a year.
That's not much.
It's not much, yeah. It can't be more than a few hundred, couple thousand at the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And how, we were kind of wondering what the rest of the world looks like if these communities are only a little portion of,
yeah, like, is there a circle with a 100-mile radius just plopped in the middle of North America somewhere that has sameness and like is, they don't have sunshine, but they grow crops. That was a little weird to me. Apparently, it's overcast constantly.
They got rid of sunshine, but some kind of weird weather barrier stuff going on.
Yeah, where there are all these little utopian communities that are built on the same models and controls.
Well, I mean, that's basically what I have to say. We both really like it.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the best YA novels out there.
And it takes 3 hours to read?
Yeah. Maybe? Maybe.
I mean,
if you're slow.
Whatever. You read fast, Ben. I read fast. I mean, I don't know if it took me 3 hours or not, but I mean, you'll sit down for an hour and then go, oh, I'm like halfway through the book.
Oops. Yeah, it does go really fast, even if you're not me. Even if you're not a dick like I am.
Yeah. Disgusting. So anyway, what are you reading right now?
Let's see. I am reading Academ's Fury. Jim Butcher. It is the second book in a series that I incorrectly identified as the Solara Codex last week. It's actually the Codex Alera. There are no S's in there. And it's a world where people have elemental powers and control these little spirits, and the protagonist doesn't have the ability to do that, so he has to survive by basically being smarter and cooler than everyone else. So it's pretty fun.
I'm mostly just reading books for academia right now about Shakespeare and stuff.
Nerding out.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Nothing new to report. So that's about all we have. If you would like to drop us a line, and we would really, really, really love feedback, anything you have to say,
any form of feedback, yes.
You can leave a comment at novelideaspodcast.com.
Or you can email us at novelideaspodcast@gmail.com.
And you can contact us on Twitter at novelideaspod.
You can get the yawns and hop on Twitter.
Oh, Lord. I apologize. Right, and, you know, anything you have to say, we'd love to hear it. We'd love to talk to you about it. This is, like, our podcast is the shortest amount of time we can possibly talk about this, you know.
Yeah, as long as they are, that is completely true.
Trying to keep it down to an hour and still not doing so good. So yeah, anything you have to say would be great. And then for anyone who is interested, next week
we'll be reading Dracula.
Dracula.
The original classic Bram Stoker, Dr. Acula.
Dr. It's pretty, it's one of the classic horror books.
Yes.
And it's the old, old school vampire.
Yes, yes it is. And if Dracula really was Dr. Acula, he would be a hematologist, just so you know. Specializing in blood.
Alright.
Alright.
So, that's what I'd say.
On that note, maybe we should get the hell out of here.
So we hope to hear from you. Please email us at novelideaspodcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, or hit us on Twitter, novelideaspod, or leave a comment on the website where hopefully you're downloading this, or leave a review on iTunes, though we'll have to figure out how to get to that.
Yeah, it'd be great. We'd love it.
We would love it. All right. Well, we'll see you next week.
Yeah, peace. You have been released.